the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program.
Friends and enemies, welcome to another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast here on the CBP Media Network. My name is Joey. I'm here alone for the moment. I see my guest just got into the waiting room. Got a big show for you tonight. We got Drew Armstrong from Cathedral Bitcoin, best logo in the space. I'm going to convince him to send me a hat. Looks like he might be has one on right now in the waiting room. By the end of the show, I'm going to have one too. Before we start, the usual sponsor reads EasyDNS. You guys know Mark, Jeff DeVic, the bomb thrower. He's been a sponsor of this show for a few months now. Best place for you to host your domain, virtual private server. So if you want to run a Nostr relay or you want to do BTC pay server, if you want to do GPG encryption, your email, so the encryption before you hop to hop to the next stop in an email chain, Mark is going to take care of all that stuff for you. And on top of that, he'll help you do the migration. That's the biggest pain. I know we've had people in the past tell us that they've had a lot of help from Mark when they've signed up for, you know, whatever package or a la carte service. Don't forget, if you tell him we sent you, use the code CBP Media, whatever, get 50% off your first purchase, which is pretty sick. That's a big chunk of change. And the second sponsor, of course, Bull Bitcoin, Francis and the gang. We actually have something cooking on the giveaway front pretty soon. I won't give away too much. We talked about it a bit on the show Monday, but there's a couple of little deal sweeteners in there as well now. So you're going to like that. If you want to buy Bitcoin KYC free in Canada, any Canada post, you can e-transfer into if you want to make an account, no KYC under $1,000. On top of that, you can pay your bills with those guys, which is sick. And there's a bunch of other services on there. Don't forget, in about 2 weeks or 3 weeks, I was talking to the team today, they're going to have the iPhone app out. The Android app is already out in APK, and it's going to be on the App Store proper, I think, in like 2 weeks as well. So you're going to be able to do Lightning, custody, in-app purchases of Bitcoin if you use your Bull account. Awesome. Use the code CBP. I think if you go to mission.bullbitcoin.com/CBP, all lowercase CBP, they'll throw you $21 on your first $100 fund and purchase, which is sick, 20%. Don't game the system, you perverts, okay? Just make sure that you're using that service to buy your Bitcoin. It's the best place. Okay, Drew is here now. There's been a lot going on, Drew, since the last time we spoke, but maybe most importantly, you've like leveled up the mustache, and I've been watching, like I always do like a little bit of Oppo research before the show, and the fits that you are rocking in some of these, like what seem to be fairly high profile presentations and interviews, they are something, man. I just watched one where you're talking about energy and entropy. And I was telling my wife, I'm like, this is some serious drip on this guy. I don't know where he came up with this, the pants, the belt, the unruly curly hair, but it was working, man. What's going on? How you doing?
Not much, man. It's great to see you again, Joey. I think it's, I'm trying to figure out the last time we talked live. I think it was January of last year.
Something like that.
Yeah, no, unfortunately the quote drip is, we're talking about cheap chinos and Carhartt from the local tractor supply up in New Hampshire, but no, I appreciate it. And yeah, it's been a really eventful last 18 months. I think this was not the universe that I had envisioned, or at least it was not all the things that went down since we last talked were not necessarily on my bingo card, but it's certainly been a fun ride.
Yeah, man. So why don't we start with this? People know who you are. Cathedra is, I think, a fairly popular name in the space. I know you guys are publicly traded on TSXV. We'll get into that in a bit. But maybe tell people what you guys have done. What have been the major milestones over the last year and a half or so? I know there's a bunch. I know you guys have, you know, done a lot of updates on the website as well. But give people maybe the, what's a 30,000 foot view for the moment?
Yeah, definitely. So rewind 18 months. We're talking Q4 2021. AJ and I joined what is now Cathedra, but was formerly called Fortress Technologies, in hindsight at the tippity top. Our goal at the time was to scale up rapidly so that we could compete with some of the largest Bitcoin miners. And our differentiated power strategy at the time, relative to the other public mining companies, was off-grid, namely waste methane. When we had last spoken, we had just entered into two very large futures orders with Bitmain. We were in the process of scaling up our manufacturing operation up in New Hampshire, where we could build our own proprietary mobile data centers that our CFOMO Isaac Fithian cleverly named Bitcoin Mining Rovers, the idea being that they would go around the world looking for the cheapest energy and have a lot of interesting automation features similar to their NASA namesake. But you know, as the saying goes from Mike Tyson, everyone has a plan until you get punched in the face. As we were basically ramping up manufacturing, looking to really go and run hard at flare gas mining, a few things happened. One, Bitcoin started to go down. In hindsight, this was likely due to players like FTX and 3AC liquidating Bitcoin as a lot of their other trades basically started to price in interest rate hikes, resulting in basically the crash we saw all of last year. So that was happening on the Bitcoin side with hash price going down. At the same time, there was also a strange crunch on the other end for anyone doing oil and gas mining, where the cost of gensets, not only to buy gensets, but especially to lease them, also ballooned. And at the same time, natural gas was really surging after the European and really global energy crisis. So you had revenue getting compressed. You had the cost of production, especially, you know, there's really an energy crisis around the world last year, but it was especially noticeable in oil and gas Bitcoin mining with the cost of natural gas and the cost of these gensets going up. And you know, we basically had to make some hard choices last year where starting in May, we really, right as the Luna stuff was going down and you started seeing Bitcoin crash to 30K, we quickly realized that our macro outlook needed some updating. So to do that, we you know, liquidated our Bitcoin, we paid down our ASIC-backed debt from NYDIG, and you know, really tried to just get the hash rate deployed as quickly as possible so we could just be cash flow positive. Obviously, conditions continued to deteriorate over the course of the next 6 months. And, you know, we had to make some like further hard choices. But a lot of those, you know, that those challenging situations we were dealing with, you know, hash price going down to really some of the all-time lows, getting close to like 5 cents or $50 a petahash, depending on how you want to look at it. And that actually ended up breeding some really like beautiful positive things. So the compression in hash price led to Isaac Fithian, our CFOMO, and Reid Browning, our CTO, really doing a lot of intense work on underclocking. We had a strange situation where we had a lot of machines, but even like looking at the hosting deposits, sometimes you'd see paybacks of, you know, like 2 years just on a hosting deposit, let alone building out your own data center. And so seeing as like our, you know, our number one job is as fiduciaries to maximize shareholder value, Reid and Isaac had the crazy idea of underclocking our S19J pros and really trying to just get the most efficient hash rate possible. And they were basically able to get down to like S19XP efficiency by really underclocking those machines. So that was a big priority for us in Q4. And, you know, really since then, we haven't seen a huge uptick in hash price. Like obviously we've gone from call it like $55 a petahash to, you know, at the highs, we briefly went up to $120 a petahash during the BRC20 pump, and we got some help from Ordinals. But like the mining economics is still pretty tough. And so what we've really just been trying to do is, you know, do whatever we can to get the most capital efficient hash rate with the most downside protection online as possible. So a lot of that's been working with third parties who, you know, have been great partners to us, to use their infrastructure to run our machines so we can get as much cash flow in the door as possible. And at the same time, reserving our ability to underclock those machines. So that way, if we do get punched in the face with another serious drawdown in Bitcoin price, we'll be able to weather the storm because we can reduce our break-even hash price to like, you know, $39 a petahash, which is certainly lower than anything we've seen. And then beautifully, we've been able to get back off grid working with the folks at 360 Mining, utilizing, you know, finally putting a rover to work as the natural gas prices have come down and off-grid mining economics have improved. And so we're really excited to be working with them and getting this first rover out the door here into the field in the next, you know, several weeks here. So it's been a rough ride, but, you know, I think we've learned a lot about not only mining, say, from the technical point of view with underclocking, but also just about the industry over the last 12 months. So it's definitely been chaotic, but it's been a really fun ride.
Well, you guys are one of the, I think, smaller outfits. And, you know, to your credit, Drew, there's been majors who I think have struggled mightily, you know, one or two going under, obviously, in the last 18 months. Whereas you guys, it sounds like, you know, maybe because you're able to be more agile as a smaller outfit, maybe because you have a little bit more ingenuity in your leadership team, which I think is, you know, a fair thing to assume given the nature of that squad there. And maybe it's also because you guys are really Bitcoiners. You know, I think there's something to be said for that. Like if I, you know, a little inside baseball, there's other miners who ask to come on this show, and Len and I are pretty judicious about where we spend our time and who we talk to. And, you know, if I look across the landscape of the miners, especially the guys who are publicly traded, Canada and the US, a lot of them have, you know, what they're calling sort of diversified income streams, which is really just like, you know, fiduciary code for mining shit coins, data centers, gaming, things like that, that aren't really true to the mission. You guys have done a good job really staying true. I think, you know, to your credit, liquidating the Bitcoin, I think, is a good idea. And I want to get into the Bitcoin balance sheet strategy during the bear market. But do you think, you know, other miners, the bigger guys, you know, what could they learn from an outfit like you? I don't want you to give up any trade secrets, but it seems to me like you guys did a really good job both in weathering that storm. But one thing I think you did well on top of that was communicating it both to the Bitcoin maxi crowd and to the shareholders. Do you have a view on that? What do you think the bigger guys could learn from you in that regard?
Yeah, well, one, I really appreciate the kind words, so thank you. And I think as I look back in like the last 12 months, it makes me really grateful and honored to work with the team that we have. I mean, obviously, I think AJ Scalia, the CEO of Cathedra, is really, I've known him for 20 years now, but I think he really is one of the smartest people who I've ever met. And it's like a pleasure working with him. He saw the writing on the wall with the bear market and kind of the worsening macro conditions well before I did. And so he saw danger up ahead. So credit to him. Isaac and Reet are some of the most like talented technical folks in mining that I've ever met. And their like range of knowledge is incredible, where they know so much, not only about energy markets and about, you know, what makes a good modular data center for Bitcoin mining. But then even like the ASICs themselves, to even be able to conceive of that underclocking strategy at a time where Bitmain hadn't even like released their standard underclocking firmware update yet. Like they really, I think, pushed the envelope there. And so we're tremendously grateful for them. And then even like, you know, Sean Tai, our CFO, who just finds a way to make sure that the financials go out every quarter. Like we're a five-person team right now. And of course, you know, Marty's on the board and he's great strategically with advice, as is David Jake. So like we're a very small group. And I think being so small has made it much easier to like act really nimbly. And to really, you know, if we think through something and it seems like a certain course of action makes the most sense, even if it would seem crazy on the surface, we're able to kind of have the conviction to just go and do it. Now, a couple things to your points with, say, some of like the larger miners and, you know, some of their strategies. Like one, I kind of also have to kind of just give credit to like Mara is very, very large and it's very easy to dunk on Mara. But like Mara's done a really good job of like, you know, growing their market cap and like growing their business. Now, you know, there may be certain things that I would have done differently, but like they're a $2-3 billion company right now and we're much smaller. So I can't really be casting too many stones for my glass house. But the one point that I think you brought up is really interesting is how they're not necessarily like full Bitcoin zealots. Now, if you look over the last 2 years, a liquidating all of your Bitcoin every single day to hold cash was actually like the right strategy in terms of if you wanted to just get as much cash as possible. So like we have to call a spade there. Maybe our Bitcoin maximalism ended up being working to our detriment there. I think one of the biggest learnings for me is I'm so fucking bullish over the course of the next like 10, 20, 30 years. But you know, you kind of need to be you kind of need to realize that you can't have that 80% drawdown at any point in time along that path to $1 million Bitcoin. And I think that was like a little piece of humble pie. Like I never really sold Bitcoin until we liquidated all the Bitcoin on the balance sheet. So it definitely was an alarming experience. I smoked many sober cigarettes that weekend, but like in hindsight, it was the right choice. And then, But I think you touched on something there that I think really deserves double clicking on, because I think this is really the future of where mining is going. If you think about Bitcoin mining, we're really like a load bank service, right? And that's something Steve Barber's talked about for a while. A lot of folks have talked about, like, well, we are a permissionless energy sink that, you know, provides a way to monetize your energy anywhere in the world at any point in time. You can switch them off whenever you want. It's like the best way to monetize wasted energy. Now, if we think about that, like traditionally in the energy world, someone might pay to have a load bank as opposed to having a load bank that pays. So that's a big change. But if we think about the future of Bitcoin mining, where you might have all kinds of non-economic incentives that come in, you know, that will always create pressure on economics for mining. And I think if we look out 10 to 20 years, the future of mining is Bitcoin mining will always be in service to another revenue stream. Now, I agree that shitcoin mining is going to zero. So I don't think that's the right alternative revenue stream. But I think we're already seeing some examples of how this would work in the wild, whether that's you could make the case that all the ERCOT demand response guys are really just selling ancillary services to the grid, right? They're like a Bitcoin miner come power trader. They're basically trading power, but because they have Bitcoin mining, this orthogonal bid on their energy, they always have the two options. They can either sell their energy to the grid or they can use that energy to mine Bitcoin. Right. So that's one strategy, like the Bitcoin mining miner come power trader. The second strategy that we're already seeing with folks like Greenwich, you know, who's really a pioneer in this, but also Stronghold, right, where you're a Bitcoin miner come power producer, or in their case, it's sort of the opposite. But basically, we're either going to be selling power to the grid, like we're producing power no matter what. We're either going to sell it to the grid or we're going to mine Bitcoin with that. So that, again, it just makes you much more robust to any drawdown in Bitcoin price or crazy network hash rate, because you always have a backup. And then lastly, and then I'll shut up and let you talk, sorry. But the lastly, you know, we haven't really seen this implemented out at scale yet. But and I forget the name of some of these guys. Is Mint Green one of them? I don't know, like the Bitcoin mining like space heaters.
Yeah.
It's like you have an S9, which is like a very overpriced S9 in a lovely plastic enclosure. But like, you know, that's energy that's going to be spent no matter what. So Bitcoin mining is just a way to get some additional revenue from that. And so I could totally envision a world where you have like large convention centers or hotels using the waste heat from Bitcoin mining. Now, it's not really like all that scalable if you think about, like just going and setting up 100 or like 50 miners in a hotel and maybe having someone pay attention to them some of the time, maybe not. Like maybe you don't always, like there's a lot of tricky things from a business perspective, but like it's hard to compete with energy that would literally be bought otherwise and turn it to heat. So
it's important. Some of the things you're saying there, I'm a fan of the hobby miner turned, you know, home heater turned hotel heater. There's a guy actually in Windsor who just started I think it's like a short-term rental. He calls it the Bitcoin Hotel. I'm pretty sure we had the guy on. His name's Ray Blanchard. And so what he's doing is he's got basically, you know, a dozen miners in the basement of this complex, and he's marketing it to Bitcoiners. It's neat, right? For guys like you and me, if I was ever in that area, you know, I don't think there'd be a per night number high enough where I wouldn't stay there at least one night. So I would just have to see it, right? For the average person, maybe it's not that much of a draw. Now, you mentioned a couple of things there, right? And so one of the things in Bitcoin mining that's, it's become a frequent discussion point among miners and on podcasts, things of this nature, is the relationship between demand response and Bitcoin mining. And one of the things that's important in that relationship is political will. Seen some mix of, you know, column A and column B, especially in the United States, when it comes to the willingness to allow a miner to be part of the demand response, activity, let's say, on a grid. You got guys like Dennis Porter, who I think are really making good cases all around the United States for how Bitcoin mining can help, why Bitcoin's a good idea, et cetera, et cetera. But you got a lot more people on the other side, probably, Drew, I would say, still to this day. How involved are you guys at Cathedra with the political game? It's something that's fascinating to me, because a lot of our guests will say there's no point in getting involved with politicians because they don't get it. And because at some point, it's not going to matter. Then there's people who say, you know, the accelerationists, we'll call them, who say, we actually should just keep voting in the worst politicians and not engaging with them because they'll just push this thing to a million faster. And then there are people like Dennis and others who say, let's engage with these people in good faith on their level and see if we can't convince them the way that we were convinced. Where does Cathedra fall in that? And maybe you personally, where do you fall in that spectrum?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I think there are many, many similar examples, you know, really just with politics in general, right? Where it's like, okay, you're just one person. To what extent is it worth sort of your time to go play like the political game or to go, you know, get involved in all this stuff? And so I would say as Cathedra, as a company, you know, we had the pleasure of working with the New Hampshire Crypto Commission, kind of state commission in the governor's office, where they brought in a lot of folks in the field to basically come and chat, not only about, you know, I wish it was just called the Bitcoin Commission, but I digress. But you know, you have some really forward-thinking regulators like Keith Ammon, Representative Keith Ammon up in New Hampshire, who he really groks Bitcoin. And like, it's really impressive just how much he deeply gets it. He's been longer in the space longer than I have. And so it's been a pleasure and a privilege to be involved there. You know, I think the reality is though, that we're like a 5-person company and we're like scrappy entrepreneurs trying to build like a really great business. And it's probably easier to have like regulatory budget in terms of time and capital if you're a much larger, more established company. But we're still, you know, we like eat, sleep and breathe trying to make Cathedra, you know, like 10-100x from here. So like, that's definitely priority number one. Now it was great to be involved in New Hampshire because that's a place where, you know, we have a presence. We had a natural relationship with Keith Ammon, and it was really easy for us to get involved, and it felt natural. Now AJ and I both grew up in the DC area. And, you know, when I grew up, I was saturated with politics because, you know, my mom worked for the government. Every day after she picked us up from school at like 6 p.m., you know, we'd watch like the local news on ABC 7 with Leon Harris at 6. Was it,
Leon, World great News. Radio voice on that guy, by the way. Outstanding radio voice on Leon Harris.
Great radio voice. And, you know, it's buttery. but then we had it's the World News Tonight with Peter Jennings at 6:30. Then Nightly News with Tom Brokaw. And then like maybe we'd flip on PBS afterwards. So like I grew up steeped in this. I even like served on my town council when I was in high school. And, you know, I don't feel a huge personal compulsion to go and get involved in the kind of like in the swamp right now. Now, I think it's really important that we like communicate openly with like what's going on, because I think eventually the truth will win. And my personal view is that unfortunately, especially in America, we have this like this staunch like red team, blue team divide. And it's not really all that like interesting of a take. It's kind of midwit, but like you have this red team, blue team divide, and eventually you're just going to end up with people like choosing their own adventure. And especially it's relevant in the context of energy. You can either as a state or as a jurisdiction embrace a pro energy, pro humanity outlook where you're, you know, pro freedom, pro markets, pro property rights. And, you know, as a result, you will enjoy much more prosperity in the long run because the energy is cheaper, rising energy prices again, or aggressive tax. People have the freedom to go and start businesses and to go try to make great things happen. Or you have the option where you take the Malthusian path and it's just like all energy consumption is bad. That needs to be regulated by the state. We need to increase taxes. Oh, and by the way, your energy costs are going up. And since your energy costs are going up, we need to increase taxes some more, or maybe it's money printing. But by the way, a lot of that's going to go subsidize unreliable energy sources that are just going to increase energy prices, further exacerbate the problem. And so I, you know, for me, it's hard not to just see kind of like this path is inevitable. And you know, it's been great to chat with different regulators and different, you know, government officials over the last, couple years. And it's great. I'm grateful for the folks who are doing that work for the regulatory advocacy. I don't personally think that that's where I'm not going to really move the needle there, especially like the lobbyists write the laws anyway, and no lobbyist wants to talk to some 28-year-old with a mustache who's trying to build a business. So,
hey, don't sell the mustache short. A lot of people have mustaches now.
That's all I got.
Yeah. Listen, the thing, okay, the mustache is one thing, but in terms of people who want to talk to you, okay, I was looking through your investor deck. The investor deck, again, to me, and if you're listening, watching, I see the chat is buzzing. If you're interested in seeing the Cathedra investor deck, you just go to the website and have a look at the investor tab. It's all there for you. It's like, you know, maybe 9 slides, 10 slides, something like that. The first slide, okay, is what looks to me like maybe some kind of like AI generated utopia, like the world after Bitcoin. I think that's funny. Like, I think that's jokes, and you know, it makes me hype. And I would share that with people and be like, look at this, this is great. But you guys are seeking investors. you're talking to, like you said, maybe a lobbyist or maybe a politician, maybe a crypto council. And you guys have like, you know, in your deck stuff like, you know, we want human prosperity. I don't have to tell you, Drew, that human prosperity doesn't always like cleanly translate to P&L to investors and to like shareholders. Do you guys think about that at all when you do your messaging? You're just like, fuck it, I don't care. This is what I believe. I want other people who believe the same thing. Sort of this Isaiah's job ethos, right? Like, I will not water down the message because I want the people who join my cause to be as committed as I am.
Yeah, you know, I think it is that, because, you know, we really do believe this shit. Like, we, you know, the company tagline or motto is sound money and abundant energy are the keys to human flourishing. And, you know, we really believe that. It's something we just also put out a blog, and a lot of the blog to start, you know, we're gonna have some of the pieces that we've already written before sort of kind of put in front of people again, just to sort of in case people didn't see them. But, you know, AJ and I, a little more than 2 years ago, when we were still at Galaxy, we published pseudonymously this one piece, Bitcoin Mining and the Case for More Energy. And that all came from like ideas we were thinking about for the year before. And it's funny how much of that I still think is true. I just haven't heard a compelling case against it. You know, and I genuinely would love, if someone sees like a flaw in our reasoning, I would genuinely love to hear it. But really the only difference between, you know, humanity today and like where we have this, the technological infrastructure to support 7 billion lives on this planet, like the only difference between this world and, you know, the world, say, any number of hundreds or thousands of years ago, is really just our ability to harness energy, to reduce entropy, and to just like preserve human life and to sustain human life. And the best way to coordinate that market activity is with sound money. And so we really do believe this. Now, of course, we're also capitalists. And so our the goal is that we can do both, right? Like we can champion what we think is sort of this unobjectionable truth, and at the same time deliver a great outcome for our shareholders. Like that certainly is our goal. But you know, I think when AJ and I took over this company, we kind of realized that, like, you know, we're not these like 45-year-olds who need to worry about being reasonable. Like we're trying to really make something special here happen, and we're gonna relentlessly pursue that and do whatever we can to make it happen.
Okay, I personally love that. I think the presentations I watched, the interviews I watched, and then when I went to the deck, I thought, this is too much. Like, I can't believe this. These guys are actually running with this. It's fantastic. I wish that other people had the same amount of conviction. Now, the one thing I see in your presentations and in the deck as well, and you might be the first miner to do this. Maybe I'm missing this somewhere else, or maybe it's worded somewhere differently and I'm just not understanding it. But this idea that you guys are going to start offering quote unquote financial services or be a provider of financial services. I will tell you that to me, this looks like an avenue that, while promising potentially, I'll wait to hear why you think it's promising, I'm sure you have a good reason, is an avenue for maybe regulatory friction, hassle, capture, whatever. You know, why are you guys doing this? Are other people doing this? Where did this idea come from? And what is it really? What are you talking about when you say that?
Yeah, so there's been this long prophecy in Bitcoin mining about like the vertically integrated Bitcoin miner.
This is what I'm talking about. Prophecy. It's a prophecy in Bitcoin mining. Okay, continue.
I'm first and foremost a zealot, but no, I think there's this long prophecy of Bitcoin mining that I think the first instance of it, at least that I know of, you know, you could argue that Bitmain ended up going and doing a lot of this, with Matrixport and with them. With their own prop mining operation, but even before then, there was a gentleman. I want to say his name was Steve Mosher, who worked for Canaan way back in the day. Canaan, of course, the first ASIC. They built the first Bitcoin mining ASIC in 2013. They recently made a nice comeback, and coincidentally, AJ and I helped work on their IPO back at Galaxy. but so, and that was in 2019. So there's a guy we were talking to there who basically would tell us about the this long prophecy of the vertically integrated Bitcoin miner that owns the energy resource, makes their own ASICs, builds their own data centers, like owns the data centers. And then they also offer like financial services on top of that. And, you know, of course, that's financial services on top of that. Like that can be construed in many ways. Like maybe there's a Bitcoin on-ramp associated with that. Maybe it's doing something like some call underwriting strategy or call overwriting strategy. So that way you can basically earn yield on your Bitcoin. Maybe it's something novel. And AJ and I have kicked around a few ideas that we think are interesting, but certainly nothing anytime soon. Certainly wouldn't constitute as anything material. This is what we've been thinking about really over the last 4 years. Like, are there interesting things that you can do as a Bitcoin miner? Like, you're producing this Bitcoin. Maybe there are interesting things that you can do in terms of financial services. And the idea with doing all of that is you own the Bitcoin production, and you know, whether it's the distribution or you know whatever it might be, you have this fully vertically integrated business that is completely sort of, if you take just simple Bitcoin on off ramp, you have a lot of really interesting things you can do there, because you don't even necessarily need to use a third party to sell your Bitcoin. Like, it's all self-sovereign from top to bottom. Like, you control your own ASICs, you control your own energy, you control your own mining operations. And then you can even just sell it yourself too. Like, you don't even necessarily need someone else. Of course, to your point, it's quite regulatory intensive. Like, you need MTLs and all these licenses anywhere you want to do it. But we think it's an interesting idea. And, you know, AJ and I, again, like, in an ideal world, we build this into being a really successful business, and you know, we're in this for the long haul. So what's the old meme from Dune? It's like our plans are measured in centuries. So it would be amazing to be able to eventually make good on that.
This is like, I gotta tell you, okay, I knew before we sat down that you were gonna pepper me with quotes and other sort of fascinating tidbits and quips from the past and philosophy and things of this nature. I'm surprised there's no Dune slide now that I think about it, because that is a good quote for what you guys are going after. Now, here's a tougher question for you now. You guys have a fellow from SVB, I believe, with some background in SVB on your board. He's an independent director. You said his name earlier. I forget it now.
David Jakes. He was the first CFO of PayPal.
Did you take any shit for that when SVB went under?
No. I mean, I think David certainly wasn't, managing their bond strategy. David has been kind of on much more independent entrepreneurial path for a while now. Fortunately, we didn't get any shit for that now. But the banking crisis was pretty crazy. And it definitely, going through things like that, made us very grateful to have folks like David on our board, who are just, they've been through a lot. Like, they've really seen the world transform over the many decades in their career. And so, having someone like David on the board definitely makes it much easier to navigate a lot of that turmoil.
Yeah, I think you're probably right about that. The financial services thing, to bring it back to what you were saying, the vertically integrated Bitcoin miner is something that I've heard this before. I didn't know the origin of it, but I think, maybe we talked about it last time you were here. Maybe we didn't. I think you and AJ, we had some other stuff to discuss at that time. But since then, this other miners we've talked to, other people in the space who talk about this dream of basically owning the stack, right? Like you just described. Don't you think that is there some likelihood in your view that companies like Shell or Exxon are working on something like this? I know what was the oil company that just sponsored the Bitcoin conference in Miami? Was it, oh my goodness. Might've been Exxon. Maybe. I can't remember which one it was, but they were a title sponsor of that conference. And the more I see this now, I see the Black Rocks and all these people kind of talking about Bitcoin as this generational thing, international asset, whatever Fink said today. If those gas companies aren't doing it, and this, you can answer this however you want, or you can tell me to fuck off. If they're not doing it, what makes you think you guys can do it? Cause I don't know one way or the other, but what makes you think you guys can do it if those guys either don't want to or can't?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a really great point. And I think maybe just to get at the first, call it more abstract question, and then I'll talk about some Cathedral more specifically. So obviously one of the things we're really focused on when we started was vertically integrating ourselves, right? Building your own boxes. No, you need to be a very large scale to make your own ASIC. So we had no such delusions of grandeur, but, we wanted to build our own boxes. So that way we weren't, we could control our own destiny, and we weren't beholden to third parties. Like, at the time, to buy your own box was really it was a 6-month lead time, and they're crazy expensive. So we're like, all right, we can build a better box ourselves. Let's go do that. And we can control our own supply chain. Now, of course, the global supply chain fucking chaos ended up still really our key suppliers ended up falling down, even though they have nothing to do with Bitcoin mining. So many, many hard lessons learned there. But the thing about vertical integration that I appreciate with in hindsight is that it needs to be gradual, it needs to be organic, right? Like you don't have a tree that just like steps in and quickly grows like massive roots. Like this takes, again, it takes much time. Plans measured in centuries. Like you don't get a redwood overnight, right? And so that was definitely a great like lesson in terms of management and like running a business and running projects. But I think we've still built some like very some amazing boxes that we're really excited to now get in the field. Thinking about the bull case for vertical integration is you control everything. And you know, no one can turn off, like if you're off grid, fully vertically integrated, no one can like turn off your energy, right? You mine with your energy, you're not susceptible to fluctuations in market price, et cetera, et cetera. The bear case is that it's very capital intensive, or the downside is very capital intensive, right? And it requires a lot of different types of understanding to really pull that off and do it well. So, you know, if you assume that there are the benefits of vertical integration, but it's capital intensive, that makes someone like an Exxon or like a large energy super major like really well positioned to get into Bitcoin mining, right? Because they have massive balance sheets. They can go deploy a bunch of Bitcoin mining infrastructure. Now, the issue is, again, is that I think the businesses and like the organizations that are always most successful are the ones that grow organically. And like the ones that are really like robust and have like shown their fitness in a competitive environment. And so I think right now the big advantage for all Bitcoin miners is the energy companies aren't really doing it at scale yet. And if Bitcoin, you know, and maybe they're all sitting on their hands right now because of the FTX stuff, because of the regulatory uncertainty. If Bitcoin 10X is from here, it's going to take a long, long time. You know, even if we consider post-halving, I did some math on this a couple months ago. If Bitcoin, the current Bitcoin network's like 15 gigawatts, right? If Bitcoin were to 10X, for hash price to stay the same, you would need roughly like, you know, north of 100 gigawatts, right? Like 130 gigawatts or something to come online of Bitcoin mining infrastructure just to keep hash price at where it is today. Now, even if you look at that post-halving, that's still like a 5X on the 15 gigs. Like that takes so much like resources, so much capital, like so many transformers and transmission lines would need to be built in order to build that out, like new energy infrastructure altogether, that like that's really the moat for Bitcoin miners is you're either hashing or you're not. And if Bitcoin 10X is and you aren't hashing, like, you know, good fucking luck getting some ASICs plugged in. Now, so think about it. You're right, where it's like an energy company could theoretically right now get in and like really eat Bitcoin miners lunch because they have cheaper energy and they have a bigger balance sheet. Like they could totally do that. Now, as my things evolved, I think the reason why that might not happen is the tranching of risk, right? Like what risk do energy companies really want? Do they want to ride Bitcoin volatility and Bitcoin hash price? Or is the natural way to do it more similar to like other forms of finance where you have different tranches of risk that satisfy different people's desires, right? Where I started my career doing asset-backed securities. You could have multiple tranches of an asset-backed security and you have different investors that want to play in each one, right? Like maybe some people want the AAA one-year bond. Some people want the equity piece that's like higher risk, higher return. Like there is a natural sort of like layering of risk. And so maybe it ends up being that as an energy company, if they make a small margin on their energy, but it's guaranteed, they're fine with that. And they're happy to let their Bitcoin mining customers be the ones to ride that risk up and down. So I could totally see it going both ways, but that's kind of how my thinking's evolved.
That's not a bad point, actually, this idea that they're really exposed to it anyways, right? Through the customers that they have. Okay, yeah, that's a good point. I to be honest with you, I hope that some Bitcoin miner is able to do this, because if there's one thing that Bitcoin miners, you know, really exemplify in my view, and you guys do it well over Cathedra, you mentioned it, this kind of scrappiness, right? Like as much as I hate the, you know, we're the new Western frontier or whatever those fucking guys at Bankless say every week. There's some truth to that. You guys are really, you know, doing things for the first time in this regard. And there was an episode of, was it TFTC a couple weeks ago, Reet and, forgive me, names are
Isaac.
Yeah, we're on there together. Listening to those guys talk, it honestly sounds like they're just like kids in a candy store talking about the first time they underclocked, all the ways they were tinkering with the ASICs and all that stuff. But if anyone could find ways to make this work and make it work at scale, And to your point, you know, build the Redwood over time. I think it would be the Bitcoin mining, you know, guys, the sort of new age engineers of this new age money. And I'm looking forward to seeing what happens. Now, you guys are one of the TSX favorites. There's people in the chat here talking about how they're all bag holders of Cathedra. I also have a Cathedra bag because, hey, why the fuck not, right? And one of the things I'm curious about, and I'm sure you guys have thought about this or talked about it, there's a lot of investors. Well, let's say your investors are broken into two tranches, let's call them. One is the guy like me or like the guys and girls in the chat who like the company, know you guys through Twitter, know you guys through podcasts, you know, are familiar with kind of your ethos and your mission focus and want to support the company and be invested in the company. They want to see what's next. That tranche, I don't think is much of a worry for you guys because we get it. We understand what you're doing and we want to be a part of it. There's another tranche though that I wonder if you're concerned about given the recent, you know, sort of ETF stuff. And I know in Canada, there's some already available spot ETFs, but in the US, they're just starting to kind of take shape. The second tranche is the investor that wants exposure to Bitcoin price, but can't get it in their tax efficient accounts just yet. And they're maybe using something like Cathedra or whatever, some other miner. Do you think the miners have to be concerned about inflows drying up a little bit on markets because of the ETF? Do you guys talk about that at all? Do you care? Does it even matter to you? I'm not sure.
No, I think it's a fair point because I think in general, the reason most people buy Bitcoin mining stocks is because they want Bitcoin exposure, right? Like same reason why most people buy MicroStrategy. So I think it's a reasonable line of thinking. But I actually think that a BlackRock Bitcoin ETF would be so insanely bullish and lead to so much net new capital coming into the industry as a whole and coming in, like that would attract so much capital and be so bullish for Bitcoin that I think the rising tide lifts all boats and all Bitcoin miners would succeed from that. Because, you know, not only like one, you have just the massive de-risking of like, okay, we finally, like the Bitcoin ETF's been like the white whale for how many years now? Yeah. And if there was finally a Bitcoin ETF in the US, it would show like that the space has matured and institutionalized in like a big way that would be really bullish on Bitcoin price. So not only do more people feel comfortable, maybe more people want to get involved in Bitcoin mining. But then on top of that, number two, it would like increase the margins for all Bitcoin miners. So all Bitcoin miners should pump just on fundamentals after that.
Yeah. Okay. I hadn't considered that second piece there. Yeah. When the price goes up, you guys are doing a lot better on your balance sheet. Let's pretend the ETF gets approved. Let's pretend people are still investing in Bitcoin miners based on mission and vision and whatnot. You guys have a slide in your deck about why you're valuable in a way that maybe the other miners are not. What would you say to a new investor who wants to come into the Bitcoin mining equity game and is looking at you guys, looking at HUT, looking at Marathon, looking at whoever? Why pick Cathedra? Why go to Cathedra first? And why should they be interested in you guys as opposed to one of these other kind of, you know, we'll call them the majors. I don't know what you would call these guys. They're bigger than you, but not necessarily. I mean, I'm biased, but they're sure as shit not better, but maybe they're the names people look at first. Why you guys instead?
It's kind of you. And I can promise anyone listening that Joey's not a paid Cathedra shill, but the kind words are very much appreciated.
I don't have a fucking hat. I'm going to have a hat after tonight. I promise you that.
Okay. Fair enough. The I will say also for anyone listening, the long foretold merch store will finally be out soon, TM. So, but anyway, so I think they're let's call them big box miners. And that's not my phrase. That's from one of my favorite minds in Bitcoin mining who knows who he is, but anyway, so these big box miners, I think really it comes down to a couple things. Like one, we are a five person sort of like business that's really trying to grow and really trying to like scale and to build like a really special long-term business. I think a lot of those other mining companies are more like, you know, they're already like pretty large. I'm not sure, you know, I won't speak ill of any one of them, but these are like large, like mature companies that have, you know, they have like a very large finance team and like corporate development team and stuff like that. So I think if there's difference between sort of like maybe more something more of like an emerging startup versus something that's more mature. But I think the other thing too that AJ and I really, really care about a lot is just like trying to expand our hash rate in a capital efficient way. Like, well, you know, it is, you know, at some point in the company's future, like we'll probably, companies consistently need to raise capital, right? Like even AT&T and Coke, these like massive businesses, like they raise capital at some point. But I think with the way we think about the business, we really want to like deliver attractive shareholder returns. Like we really, like we are on the board, we're large holders ourselves. Like AJ, my PA is basically Cathedra in Bitcoin. And I don't really think that that's gonna, like that, that's, don't show me your opinion, like tell me what's in your portfolio. And I think really, our goal is just to build this into like a beautiful, successful business that will stand the test of time. And that's what we do every day and night, is that we just like grind for that. So I think if someone's new getting into Bitcoin mining, obviously there's a big learning curve, just like understanding hash price, understanding like, you know, the cost curve and like the cost structure, things like underclocking really throw a wrench in that, right? Like how do you even measure uptime really if you're underclocking? Or, underclocking lets you change the entire nature of your operations in terms of economics and like break even basically overnight just using software. So that's kind of like hard to wrap your head around. But the one thing I would say is there's now an emerging set of analysts in the space, whether it's the guys at Luxor or Miner Mag, who are doing some really good research. So your disposal has never been better. The resources at your disposal have never been better. But to your point, Joey, I think it ultimately just comes down to like, we're smaller, really hungry, trying to build a great business here. And I can't speak to what's going on inside the room, some of the other larger miners, but they're basically like mature businesses at this point.
Okay, last question. I saw you have a couple of tweets last little while. When you're not memeing the struggles of me moving and selling my house, it sounds like and looks like you're enjoying cigarettes. And so I'm a bit of a drunk dartsman myself. And so I'm wondering if you think it's better, do you prefer the drunk cigarette or like the, you know, I've had three beers at the bar, I'm going out for my first dart of the night, like let's say 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, or do you prefer the sober with the meal cigarette? Like you tweeted the other day, I could never do a sober with the meal cigarette, I don't think, but I'm all for the three beer dart on like a nice summer night. Which do you prefer? And like, are you like a regular smoker? Are you like a boutique smoker? Like what kind of smoker are you exactly?
So I'm mostly a shit poster. No. But I think, it's something don't smoke at home, kids, but it mostly something kind of ended up happening like organically over the last like couple of years. Certainly last year, a lot of the stress of going through the bear market, just like candidly is like, yep, I'm going to smoke a cigarette because I can, I can work a full day after that. After I watch Bitcoin crash before my eyes. But no, a lot of it's a troll. Like, I do like a cigarette. I think a sober cigarette is nice. I think a post three beer cigarette, is also nice. They're just different. But I don't do too much drinking anymore these days, just because I've definitely been in grind set mode. But I also just love to troll the people who smoke vapes. Like I love to troll the people who are like, they're ripping their Elf bar for like the thousandth time in the fifth minute.
What is an Elf bar? Is that a brand? What is that?
It's a brand of one of these e-cigs. And it's like serious, like reverse opium war vibes, right? Where like, I think all the vapes are like made in Shenzhen. And like, I spent a decent amount of time in England because my family's also English. And, I went to London like a year or two ago, and it seemed like overnight, just everyone started like vaping. And I'm just like, one, you have no idea what this is, but you have no idea what's going into this. It's not like much like Jevons paradox, right? Like it's not about replacing the cigarette puffs with vapes. It's about the puffs you would have never taken otherwise. So I mostly just like it as sort of like a middle finger to those folks. Cause I just love when someone comes up to me and sees me smoking a cigarette and is like, that's so bad for you. Don't you know that? And they're just like ripping their vape. Fucking idiots, but
stupid. Okay, Drew.
No, but I actually add one more point too, though. I think it's like, like worst case scenario. My grandpa smoked cigarettes for like 70 years, and then he just
that, okay. That was okay. I wasn't gonna ask you that, but I got asked.
And then he died of lung cancer.
Are you a cigarette? Because on Bitcoin Twitter the last few days, I've seen like the last week or so. I don't know if it's just the algo feeding me this, but I've seen like a upswing in people who are like, cigarettes are not bad for you. They're like, it's like a psyop, and nuclear weapons aren't real, among other things that are probably going to get this video demonetized, but whatever. are cigarettes bad for you? And like, I don't know if this is something people are talking about, but to me, it just seems like so obvious. Are they? Are they good? Are they bad? Are they as bad as everyone says? Where, like, where do you stand on that?
Yeah, so I stand on the side of I've done zero research. You can only go down so many rabbit holes. But it's like, look, am I going to smoke forever? Like, no. But, you know, I think I feel no real reason to stop now. I'm sure at some point I'll get a girlfriend who will finally whip me into shape and say I can't smoke anymore. And so I'm happy to kick the can down the road until that happens.
Drew's just another Bitcoiner waiting for 100K for a girlfriend. Okay, Drew, tell me where people can find out more about you. Cathedra, floor's all yours, man.
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter at _DrewArmstrong_. Follow Cathedra Bitcoin on Twitter. We have a new blog out, so blog.cathedra.com. Any information about the company or press releases, cathedra.com. And actually, Joey, maybe could I say there's one last like thing I've been thinking about over the last like week or two that I kind of would love to get your thoughts on and kind of get off my chest here. So kind of going over the last several months, I've read this like Napoleon biography. He's a really fascinating person, and I started kind of getting me going down the like a little bit of a military strategy like rabbit hole and like reading about Alexander the Great, Julius Caesar, Genghis Khan. And one sort of realization that I had is that like it's kind of the beauty of like free market capitalism in a way where people our age, we used to just go to war. And like that was the great adventure of our lives, basically like going and like conquering different lands and like plundering. And it kind of like that was the great adventure of lives. You'd go maybe on campaign for say one of these like great generals, and you'd come back home and like, hopefully you come back home and like you have a family and stuff. And then you like look back on those like military days. And I think that's something that former generations had to do even in the last 100 years, right? Like how many people would serve in World War I or World War II. And it kind of just made me think that like, there's the old like free market economist line where it's like make trade, not war. I'm increasingly just realizing that like it's a beautiful thing that now we have this very productive outlet. Where like we have this globalized economy, you have the internet where literally anyone can go online and build a business. Literally anyone can go try to make something of value that like serves others, and of course like earns economic rent in doing so and becomes like a sustainable organism within the free market. And I've just increasingly been thinking that like that is such a like beautiful thing. Like young men used to go to war, and many unfortunately are still in war now, and there will be wars again in the future. But like just what a kind of beautiful outlet it is to just be able to go and try to build a great business instead of kind of destroying things, like to be able to reduce entropy for others instead of creating it by inflicting energy on others.
I'm a big fan of this. And one of the things I take very seriously, and I've said on other shows that I've been on, and as a guy who, up until the pandemic, I used to coach basketball. I played for many years. And, there's an urge, I think, especially in young men, to conquer at some level, as you mentioned. And whether it's, the wars of the past, or whether it's, competitive athletics, or whether it's building a business, or whether it's in academics, or, there's all manner of outlets for conquering now. And to your point, the friction to hop into one of these endeavors has never been less than it is now. The problem, I think, Drew, and we can go down this rabbit hole a little bit if you want. I know I said 45 minutes, but I'd be interested in hearing what you think. One of the problems with the conquering need is that at the same time that the friction has been reduced for all these things that, as you said, reduce entropy and add value, the friction has been reduced even more to nearly zero in this sort of paper conquering options, things like video games, pornography. There's probably other good examples that I can't think of right now, but stuff like this really worries me, because when I look at guys younger than you and me, I'm 35, you said you're 28 or 29. When I look at guys younger than you and me, I see a lot of things to be concerned about. When I'm at the gym, I see guys who are more focused on what's going on their phones and, not really working as hard as they should be. I see here in Canada, especially in Ontario, our kids not doing super well on, standardized testing, and teachers who are presumably somewhere around our age as well, maybe some older, but instead of taking responsibility for the failures, claiming that the tests themselves are inadequate and we should abolish them and not worry about results so much. It worries me that conquering is not only frowned upon when done well by people who don't have that urge and don't have that capacity or capability. It also worries me that instead of pushing kids to do that conquering, we're pushing them into lower forms of the same, you know, it's like a perverted version of the same outcome, and it makes them feel good short term, makes them feel like conquerors short term. But before you know it, you turn 40 or 50. And what do you have to show for all the fake conquering you've done? The answer will be not much. And so I'm wondering, you know, in guys your age, and maybe you're the wrong guy to ask because the industry you're in and obviously the stuff you've achieved already, but is this something that you're concerned about, something you see in guys your age, like your buddies from school? You know, you're young enough that you didn't grow up without a phone in your hand, probably, right? Like I didn't have a phone in my hand until I turned 20. And so I know how to like approach people, talk to people, make eye contact with a chick. You know, it's a skill people don't have anymore. And I'm wondering if you see that in your buddies. Is it something you're concerned about? Are you worried for some of your friends?
You know, I will say I'm lucky that my friends for the most part are like pretty great people. I've gotten lucky with who I've been surrounded by and who I surrounded myself with, but it's definitely something I see as an issue kind of like on the whole, right? Where it's like, I think there's nothing wrong with like the will to greatness. And I think that it's like that urge should be given like a productive outlet. I think you're right. Like not to just like regurgitate, you know, be a midwit and regurgitate like, you know, 2015, Bitstein and like Pierre, but like, you know, maybe some of it has something to do with time preference, right? Where it's like building something that like is very long-term fulfilling versus like the instant gratification. But yeah, no, I think it's just like the you're basically choosing one of two adventures depending on, or one of a variety of adventures depending on which corners of the internet you subscribe to. And I think it's just like tremendously important to kind of keep this like pro-human, you know, outlook where it's like there's still great discoveries to be made. There's still like great unknown frontiers for us to embark on and to discover and to, you know, and then to conquer. It doesn't need to necessarily just be like this tangible, I don't mean like tangible warmongering. I mean like, you know, there's no way that we've discovered all the great things to discover and to have developed all the technologies that there are to develop. The only way that we will is by just like running hard at a particular corner of the universe to try to make a big outcome. And I think fortunately Bitcoin does provide that for a lot of people, but Bitcoin is also like just money. You know, I think there's much more to life necessarily than just like doom scrolling Twitter and shit posting about Bitcoin. And as much as I do love to engage myself. So, but no, I think we're basically seeing the same thing. And I think, I think that's why it's just like really important to continue to like, you know, like remind yourself of like kind of what's at stake here and like why you're doing what you're doing. Even if it is something as simple as just like, you know, leaving the world a marginally better place for your kid.
Yeah, it's important. Those are great last words. You want to add anything else before we wrap up?
No, I've been listening to a lot of old Timbaland, but that's another conversation. Anyway, Joey, thank you so much for having me.
Brother, it was great. Take care, everyone. Talk to you soon. Well done. Good job.